Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. For those of you who are returning, for those of you who are new, congratulations. You found it. After all these years of searching, you found somebody with a really, really terrible sense of humour that no matter how dark the times get, the comedy can always get a little bit darker to brighten your day. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest joining me today, the man who tends the wiles and twists the minds, known as Zen Gardner. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vinny. Great to be back. Boy, I loved your bumper music and the introduction.
Yeah.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. I love the whole fellow slaves of the plantation gig.
Yeah. I love the mix and the radio switching. That's really cool.
Well, I admittedly, cool. I stole that from Suzanne Posel, who used to be on this network. She had like these great bumpers kind of thing with like mixed up with the radio stuff. And I was like, man, I haven't heard that on radio for a long time. It's a good idea. Because I had all these bumper music, right? I had all the really great bumper music that I liked. But we became commercial free, so there's no breaks for me to go out and in on anymore. So I figured out a really fun and interesting way of blending in a lot of the intro music that I like that gets me in the mood for radio.
And it's great for the ADD world we live in, attention deficit disorder world. You know, you get switchy on one channel, then switch another, and kind of prepares them for the nature of your show, I would sure say.
Well, I actually would beg to disagree with you. Nothing can prepare you for the nature of the show.
Okay, well said. and nothing could have prepared us for what we're encountering on this planet, except we're here for a purpose, as we were just chatting about, and we're up to it. Certainly challenging times. Boy, that's an understatement.
Well, tell us of your challenging times. Unless it's that kind of personal stuff that you don't want to get into on radio, but a sympathetic ear can always be good.
It's been amazing. My whole life's been challenging times. It seems time is quickening. A lot of people can sense that, whatever time is, whatever the time illusion is. And, as I often explain, I've been through major changes in my life many times. The awakening process is a process. You know, you don't just awaken once and for all. You got to keep awakening. And we get new challenges all the time. So it gets pretty interesting. You know, when I was in college, I had my first awakening thanks to psychedelics and mysticism and a lot of reading, much to my PhD father's chagrin. And then I ended up just wandering out of college and headed for California to find out what's really going on, you know, because my generation grew up in that dysfunctional, I mean, everything's dysfunctional, but, you know, things were seriously dysfunctional. The corporate monster had taken over the United States and much of the world. And we grew up in households that appeared to have everything going, Ozzie and Harriet and, you know, Father Knows Best television stereotype kind of thing on the outside, but on the inside, all hell was breaking loose. And, parents were getting destroyed. Home life was, not in every case, but in most kids' cases, especially I was in upper middle-class America, the suburbs of New York City. Traumatized from day one, all of us were. We were these beautiful, eternal spirits born into a world where everybody's dysfunctional and every parent passes on all this trauma and abuse of their child because they don't know how to handle them. So, and the whole educational system is built to quench that and screw you up even more, the social system even worse. And, we spend the rest of our life trying to find out who we are and don't realize that's our quest. Instead, you're told, get the corporate job, get the house, get the pretty wife or pretty husband and toys in the garage and everything's going to be great. And my generation blew it off. They said, screw you. We're getting back to nature. We let our hair grow. We said, you know, we changed our clothes. We got together. We had, you know, crazy events. We got into music. The music got wilder and wilder. And our parents, you know, were completely pissed. And they hijacked it because it was getting, you know, the anti-war movement was so powerful. And the whole movement was hijacked, as many people are familiar with now. And a lot of my generation that I grew up with, many people, they began, you know, they were waking up in college. We all went through parallel experiences, but very few committed themselves to the quest for truth. Most opted out for the, you know, like I was in a high-end university and there all these pre-med students. And they decided, well, I'm going to be a doctor after all, even though we've been getting high and talking about all this cool stuff. I want to be a doctor and I want to succeed and I'm going to fulfill the paradigm. And I left by myself, very disillusioned, headed for the West Coast. Nobody wanted to seem to want to really commit to, you know, the quest, as Don Quixote so well says. And then it started. I was overseas for over 20 years, traveling. Went from, you know, having everything taken care of in my life to really pretty much struggling, but enjoying it. I was young and strong and very idealistic. Went through a lot of paradigms and all over the world, and eventually went back to the States. As I got older, my kids were turning into teens. They were born in India and Iran with my first wife. You know, going through marriages or partners or relationships. Those are other big stages for people, of course. Then I went through this other phase where I was, you know, trying to establish some kind of residual income. I'm getting older. Maybe, you know, I wanted to set up a foundation and you know, sort of have some kind of residual income where I could sort of cruise into my later years and take care of my kids and grandkids and that kind of thing. And that blew up back when the accounting houses first started getting exposed. I was on the early part of the curve and everything went out from under me. And then I said, that's it. I'm going back to my roots. I'm just going to go tooth and tongue. I mean, 9/11 had happened. And something's really wrong here. And I just committed myself. Everything sort of convened at that point in my life. And converged, I guess. And that's when the writing started. And started a little blog. And then it became the website. And then the writing started getting all over the internet, and I got more and more involved. And one day I got invited to be on this radio show. Actually, I got invited to a lot, but I didn't accept one until this crazy guy, Vinny Eastwood, contacted me and said, hey, man, let's talk on the radio. And that was years ago. And I was nervous as a cat. I thought, well, are you kidding me? You know, I'm going to go on the radio? What's this? And I had all these hangups. But since then, it's been more and more of that. Now I'm going out on speaking tours and I just want to do whatever I can to help facilitate this amazing phenomenon we call the awakening. But the personal changes, which you brought up at the beginning, they continue. My relationship with my dear mate for 23 years just got completely redefined, and we're still very dear friends, but it was a big change. We agreed together that, you know, there's stuff here that isn't healthy. And often these things, this was precipitated partially by, not only our working together and our both of our quests for growth and the process and all the things we're involved with, but when you, you know, we did ayahuasca together several times, and we started doing Cambo, which is a frog medicine, which is quite an amazing experience. It's good for your immune system at the least, but it's very deeply spiritual. And we ended up going through a very big change. Now we're pretty much going on our own ways, yet we're still working together very closely, actually closer now than we were before, but it doesn't have all the stigma and all the baggage. But it was a process. That was a very big change for me, and I went through that. I hinted at it in many of my articles, and I've since talked about it quite a bit, the issues of recognizing codependency in our lives that starts when you're a child. And research on the inner child and very dear friends who kind of went through the process with me, and it was pretty traumatic for me, because I realized that there was still stuff, even though I'm very sincerely introspective and open, and I'm aware of psychological processes and spiritual phenomena and all that. This came from another angle, and I wasn't I didn't see it coming, and it was a very traumatic for me. I'm very thankful for it, but I realized through that process that that we pass through changes now much quicker than previous generations. What, you know, if someone went through a divorce or a breakup, but people would live in bitterness for years and fight over money and fight over this and fight over that. And we're not that's never entered into the equation. We work together as a team still, and we both work on the website. We have tremendous communication, but had to go through this re-understanding, redefinition, like a chiropractic adjustment. And anyway, you pried it out of me. I haven't talked about it too much, but it's a beautiful thing. And I actually talked about it when I was my last speaking engagement down in up in Mexico at the Anarcapulco conference. And to me, and what I was sensing, what I was going through, and what I was hearing from others, this is no new phenomenon. This is going on with a lot of people. And then as I kind of put this out there and talked to people and shared my experiences and my sensations about these challenges that all of us are hitting, then I found out that there's people all over the place going through this process. People have been together for the longest time, people with children, people with all kinds of things, getting redefined. And it's part of the spiritual evolution, you know, this quickening, this awakening, this spiritual shift we're going through. And it's going to surprise a lot of people. These aspects like this is just one example, but it, you know, health challenges, like you said, the fire monkey year, you know, the trickster that it is, there's weird stuff going on, but you know, we're up to it. This is time for the ninja, the true warrior inside of us, to come alive. And it's all hands on deck when it comes to the overall, like you say, you know, we're being exterminated at the very least. Never mind, you know, continually manipulated. It's always been there, but it's obviously been stepped up with all kinds of technological fandangle stuff going on.
As the rate of technology increases and the sophistication of technology increases, the users devolve simultaneously.
Yes, well said. Well said. And it's happening at a, you know,
frightening, you know, it's alarming rate, something.
Yes.
One of those adjectives that connotes a great deal of panic, because it's just so excruciatingly bad. Oh, the stupidity.
Get it out. Get it out, brother. No, it's the truth. And sorry, I'm a little foggy. I had to take a good sized nap before this. It's pretty late here. But I find it fantastic. I am exhilarated at the challenge. You know, it's easier if you lean into it and if you take it, you know, and move with it and move on it, you know, and take the initiative. It's so much easier than sitting on the defensive.
It's the same principle as picking up women in a bar.
That's right. The poor quiet wallflowers don't get any action, do they? you know, it's a really cool time. It's a very exciting time, very challenging. But you know, always say, we're up to it. We're here for a purpose. It's, you know, and people develop their spiritual side. You can't help it. I don't know a person that I seriously, I guess, would say respect. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, who's gotten into research and pursued this path towards, you know, self-discovery, understanding the truth, the true nature of the world about us, and has the willingness to go and explore these other esoteric territories. I don't know anybody that doesn't have a very strong spiritual inclination, because suddenly as you break through this awakening process, the first parts are pretty tough when it hits you in the face, if you know, all of a sudden you realize, you know, the conspiracies are real and all that kind of stuff. But you eventually break through. You got to get through that first part, those muddy trenches. But then you go to the other side of it and you go, holy shit, this is amazing stuff going on. And look at all this that's been hidden from me, these spiritual realities, way past belief, way past religion. And this that area that of reality is what draws us together ultimately. That's how I see it. This is the real stuff to develop. This is where are the gifts that we're bearing inside of us and aren't aware of, but can sense, you know, in that heart sense, intuitively. This is where they lay it and what needs to be developed in order to not only process, understand, exist in this current paradigm, but know how to deal with it, because we cannot deal with them their level. We're not gonna, you know, it's like voting. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, which parasite do you want? You're so free. It's in, you know, a lot of these things are completely nuts. I mean, there's a place for local action and working according to the rules of this system. But as we all know, the whole thing's got to go. And it's just a world of exploration that people are literally just falling into. It's this beautiful, you know, call it a vibrational change, a shift or something. People are becoming aware at every level of society, not knowing how to interpret it necessarily, but learning to. And who's to say who's who and what's what and what's right and wrong in many cases. But it's developing so beautifully. And I like to track it. And, you know, for me, I can see it manifest.
Me, in I the don't. Daily news. I huh? don't see it because.
Oh, it's happening.
I just because it's happening doesn't mean I see it. Right.
My point
because,
exactly.
Because I'm not looking for it. I treat the awakening as kind of like I'm trying to facilitate the awakening. And I remember when I was doing cycling, in order to get up a hill, a really, really tough hill, you don't necessarily look too hard where you're going. You look down and you just pump as hard as you can until suddenly it feels a lot easier. you find that when you're at the top of the hill.
Yeah, good metaphor.
Because I found looking at the goal, you sometimes trip over your feet.
Yeah. Or the, you know, similarly, with that, when you're running a race, you know, you learn, if you study it, the last 10 yards or meters, that's when people stop, they slow down. It's just because, oh, there's the finish line. I'm going to slow down and cruise across it. And that's when this other guy blows past you. You know, you have to look past the finish line. There's a lot of things like that that are kind of parallel. But
I've been thinking about like this concept of giving people hope. And I've figured out that there's, well, at least I've been told and informed, that a great danger is uncritical positive thinking.
Agreed. That's a huge danger. That's kind of the New Age movement in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's and let me tell you, that is a maze of trip-offs. That is a world of hurt to, you know, anybody who sincerely wants to get through this stuff. Total. I recently wrote an article. I've been sending you my articles, but one about off ramps and diversions that are hitting. I like to address the alternative community, but they're kind of principles that are still true no matter what. But there's a lot of things that are out there right now that are working very hard, or not, they're not working, but they're, a lot of them are manufactured, as we know, but they're diversions. They lead off to places, you know, you're climbing the mountain and, oh, look, there's a little village over there. Let's go. Oh, there's really cool people. They kind of get it. They were all headed up the mountain too. And look, they've got a whole thing. They look, oh, they got a church over there. What are they all worshiping? And or they got this. And, you know, they don't get so much media flack. And I like this here. This doesn't have all the opposition and the windy, stormy, lonely conditions of traveling by myself towards this, you know, etheric goal. So let's go over here. Or, you know, cul-de-sacs, you know, where you go around in circles and don't realize that you're stuck somewhere. Mm-hmm. These things happen to all of us. They're triggered by spiritual influences, by mental influences, by social influences, and we all get tired. And people figure, well, you know, that's enough of this. You know, like happened to my friends in college. They climbed like, you know, maybe 10 feet and they decided, oh, I'm going back to the valley. Man, look at that money down there. And look at that comfort. And look at the size of the cars. You know, I'm going down there and the reputation and shit. I mean, the whole world down there. What am I doing up here by myself? You know, it's that sort of personal journey imagery, I think, that can help people. But this is the nature of the beast. This is what we're in. We're here for growth, personal growth, a personal discovery. Well, number one, like I say in my book, you are the awakening. It's in an individual process, first and foremost.
I agree, but I also disagree about how it's an individual process. I mean, everybody has to go really through it alone to a large degree, apart from, you know, friends, family, whatever support you can have. But for the most part, it's a very similar process for everybody. It's basically grief, right? With those five stages, the denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then finally acceptance. But sadly, some won't actually make it through all the stages and achieve acceptance, right? They might be stuck in one very difficult stage for the rest of their lives and create many ways to justify their antisocial behavior online so they don't have to take responsibility for it.
Well, it's a bit of a conundrum because it's very individual, but we're a collective. We are all attached to each other. We're all part of this, call it vibrational plane or existence. They call it the collective unconscious, whatever you want to call it. We're very connected. That's one of the reasons compassion is so powerful, because it breaks down the barriers and all this good versus evil stuff to where we live in a much more vibrationally transcendent state when we operate by compassion and not, you know, anger. I mean, there's a time for the right kind of anger, but you know, getting caught in all these different little games of us versus them. It's very collective, but ultimately that's up to the individual to tune into, you know, this much greater, more vast, more understanding force field, call it, that will generate the best possible contribution to this collective that's around us. So, you know, it's a bit of a conundrum. It's not, none of the stuff follows like linear thinking in many ways, but you know, it's both. It's definitely both. I agree with you. You know, it's got everything to do with the collective. I mean, what you do is all about the collective, but it's you individually who's inspired to do what you do because of your concern, your compassion, your drive, your responsiveness to what's going on around you.
Even if
you're completely insane and out of your mind, that's okay, Vinny.
I wish I was. You know, that way I might wake up tomorrow. There's no Rothschilds, no scumbaggery, no chemtrails. It'd be sweet ass, bro. I'd love it. But you know, I just took a look at myself at the time. I had plenty of money, and after several years of telemarketing, I developed a great talent for talking. You know, specifically how to translate complex and uninteresting convoluted garbage into easily comprehensible language, right? And I had a passionate interest in all things conspiracy, and I always wanted to be a filmmaker. So it was just a natural progression.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. You see it because you followed it. It became clear, but you responded to it. You know, you're alive. You're one of the live ones, and you kept going, and it developed into what you do and what you are now. You know, it's that's the individual path, but it was because of awareness of the collective. You know, it was awareness of, you know, all the scumbaggery, as you say, around you. It's like, you know, I can't just sit here quietly. I've got to say something. I got to do something. I got to call these fuckers out for who they are, and that's really important. Most people are they're not just blind, they're deaf and they're dumb. They can't say anything. You know, they're bound by all these stupid things like political correctness and fear. I mean, fear is the basis of all the vibrations. It just handcuffs people from the get-go, and they play with it like it's silly putty, these guys, and people fall for it. It doesn't matter whether it's the next false flag or economic you know, blow up fears. And now there's people really fanning these fears and playing on them within the alternative community, which really pisses me off. It's like, come on, people, let's see through this in a mature way. But that's why I was saying about these trip-offs, these off-ramps. They're so easy to fall into, and we need to really be on guard. We need to be very, you know, vigilant. We need to be more in tune with our intuitive self, our heart knowledge, and listen to these other sources that we know are much more reliable than the stupid head stuff, you know, and all the mind tricks. It's this process. It's individual and it's collective at the same time. But ultimately, it's up to the individual to respond, you know, responsibly, and continue the pursuit. I mean, even though it's not really a pursuit, because it's just a revelation of self. It's and this ultimate connectivity that's already there. It's nothing to find. It's something to release. It's something to let manifest.
In other words, in better words, what was it? You're the one you've been waiting for.
Yeah. That's and it's always been there since you were a baby. You know, since you were a child. And we can identify with these concepts in more and more empowering ways all the time. There's a lot to be learned. And like we were saying earlier, there's personal processes we all go through that help reveal these, you know, be it relationships, be it health issues, be it, facing death, or, you know, stupid fears that we're born with that seem so profound. But hey, this is freaking reality. Your body's not going to live forever, you know, contrary to what the parasitic elite are trying to do. Talk about fear. You know, these guys are trying to, through AI and, you know, transhumanism, live forever because they're so fucking afraid of death. But they can't help but reveal themselves if we're looking. These are processes we're going through, and they're good. But we have to take it head on. You know, the surfer doesn't go out in the surf defensively. You know, when you know what you're doing in the surf, you're in command of you and your surfboard, no matter how big the waves and which one you choose, when you want to go out there, and you know how to handle these things, is ultimately your individual decision. So you know, you can either paddle and catch the wave, or you can sit there like a dead duck and get crushed.
And then curse the ocean for crushing you.
Yeah, exactly.
Curse you, Poseidon!
So true.
There was actually a Roman emperor who at one point ordered his troops to run down to the sea and start stabbing it because he declared a war on Poseidon. Like, no shit. Real story.
Is that? Oh, you got to send me a link to that. I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, God.
There's so much to be learned. Like, I was fascinated by mythology out of the gate. I read Homer's works and, all the stories about Achilles. And I was fascinated by it. And I would not accept any paradigm that came along that didn't integrate the realities that were apparent in mythology, because they're obviously referring to really deep stuff. You know, and now we know there's all these kinds of entities and all these kinds of things out there, and the archons and Watiko and all this kind of stuff that is screwing with our psychology, screwing with our reality, you know, making things confusing. But they're all ultimately to teach us something. They're for our good. Fear can be our friend. These things they're all dynamics for our growth. It's not us versus them. It's an integrated process, and that's something that takes some wrapping your head around. But it's true. It's all of this is in our favor. Even this ridiculous bullshit scene that we're witnessing on the world stage, there's something to be learned from it. It doesn't mean it's not a very real enemy. Like, your own body has white blood cells that are battling, you know, continually to keep your health in shape. We're in a battle very similarly, so you can't over spiritualize it to where you disempower yourself from the very real hand to hand combat. But
What do you, feel about people who've kind of like dedicated to one thing, like with rigidity to an idea? No, this is the way I've sorted it. You know, this is the way it is. Wow, and live their lives like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure you know already what I think about it, but I write about this a lot because belief. People say that I believe this, I believe that. Well, either you think you're thinking that, or you know that, or you're just full of shit. Because when you believe something, you know, I believe that, you know, all this romanticism, which goes in relationships as well, by the way, it's ingrained in society. And you listen to any quantity of music, and it's all these crappy, drippy love songs and broken hearts, and all about attachment, and I mean, really messy stuff. Not that, you know, personal love isn't the beautiful thing and all that.
Is trashy.
Yeah. Well, it's trashy at a very deep level because most people are living in this paradigm, and you know,
it's really deep trashy. Like it's landfill.
Yeah. 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 Good word. Good word. The landfill of my mind. Da 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 da. Instead of the windmills of my mind, the landfill of my mind.
You just make it great a song called The Landfill of Belief.
Yeah. The landfill. Oh, that's a brilliant metaphor.
Oh my God, it totally is. And I'm just thinking about this now, like how many ideas have I come up with, or how many ideas have I accepted that I later found out to be not very good ideas at all, and then just throw it in the trash, right?
And then
just imagine the if all those ideas were actually deposited somewhere in a little belief landfill of all the things that you knew later on. After maturing a little bit and not being such a dipshit, found out we're absolutely useless. Yeah. And basically, there's nothing else to do with them. They're completely toxic. And you've just got to store them somewhere, out of sight, out of mind. And I thank God I don't have to look at it anymore.
It's interesting. It's even like, there's a couple of things come to mind. First of all, garbage goes out there and it generates tremendous heat. These landfills are hot. But it's disintegrating and, you know, getting more and more reintegrated back into the planet, you know, at some point. It's almost like you almost hope there'll be an asteroid to correct this whole mess, just to clean it all off or what have you, or more volcanoes, which will come. But the other thing is that George Carlin routine, you know, where he talks about environmentalism and how bullshit that way of thinking is, and he says, well, maybe Earth created man. He's talking about the man being like a real virus. He says, maybe Earth created man so that he would invent plastic, because Earth wanted plastic. And so he created plastic. You ever think about that? You know, it's a terrific routine, but it's that kind of thinking out of the, you know, way. I mean, I say, you know, think outside the hoax. Never mind the box, but it's that kind of realization that you know, look, these processes, our little problems today, you know, they're washed away, like they say, you know, in the annals of history. You look at these empires that came and went; they were so grandiose and so powerful, and da da da, Rome, Babylon, Egypt. And they just crashed the British Empire and all that. I mean, a lot of this is engineered. They only rebirth themselves in the next one, obviously.
It's almost like the story of how immortals live forever by faking their own death so that people won't think they're around anymore. And then they just pop up later in another form with another identity and continue on.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. Which they do, and way more than we think. I personally have a conviction about, but
yeah, I'm still very interested in like whether or not there's some supernatural capacity for the Wetiko and the psychopaths and all of that kind of stuff, because they've got real sharp instincts. and they're so evil and it's so devious, and they come at you from ways that you just can't freaking protect. You're like, oh my God, I cannot believe that they would say that. I cannot believe that they would do that.
Or how do they reappear? How did they do that? Like the pop-up thing at the fair, you know, you knock down one gopher and the other one pops up. I mean, I talk about that in the, you know, the serpentine stealth of the long-range planners. These guys, the fact that it's intergenerational and the way, you know, each generation that's come along, like we look just at the Rothschild, you know, the birth of the sort of the Illuminati era. I mean, it's older than that, but this particular cycle that we're going through. I mean, Amschel Rothschild, you know, he would not see the fulfillment of his vision. You know, and Adam Weishaupt was obviously just a hired gun. But they did it as if it's happening. It's like they work long range. And what is driving these insane bastards to have this world dominion in an age that they'll never see? Like, why?
So that one day their children will not only run the world, but they'll also be immortal, and their generations further down will rule the galaxy.
Exactly. I mean, the interplanetary aspect of it, I think, is integral to understanding what a lot of the technical stuff they're going through.
Maybe they figured out that in order for them to colonize space, because of the immense distances that are being talked about at the time, they figure we can't do that unless we can live forever. And those people who can live forever get to colonize space, you know? That'd be great, wouldn't it?
It kind of hails back to so-called alien influences, you know, because, you know, it's conjectured there are races that live much, much longer lifespans. And, you know, we're just one little part of this whole thing. And apparently we're a very valuable asset, our little blue marble, you know, or a little blue plate. Well, whatever people want to think, but you know, we're valuable, and a lot of people are vying for control here, and they want to use that as a base to go other places. Let's
think about the perspective of time, right? If you've got like a longer lifespan, do you remember when you were like, I don't know, 7 or 8 or something like that, maybe 10 years old, and they say, oh, you've got to wait a year or two in order to get this, that, or the other, and you're like, man, that's a really long time. That's like a fifth of my life, bro. But when you get to, you know, 30 and you say, oh, it's going to happen next year, you're like, all right, and then next year just, it's there. And the older you get, the quicker time gets, because you've got more to compare it to. So imagine if you were 500 years old. Imagine if you were 10,000 years old. Imagine the kind of plans you could weave in advance with the perspective of time that you have at your disposal.
Exactly. So then you start to wonder what exactly is influencing or inhabiting some of these really strange creatures that are perpetrating what's going on the planet.
Hmm.
And what is influencing them? Are they, you know, temporary embodiments of something else, or being influenced from the outside, like the archontic viewpoint, or, you know, possession?
There was this film called Fallen, Denzel Washington, John Goodman. And it talked about a demon that could transmit itself to hosts via touch. So it would latch onto a person and it would control them. And when it wanted to escape or change or do anything it wanted, really, it would just touch another person and transfer to them. And I thought, well, it's kind of like a very interesting but very mystical way for what really happens, you know, being told allegorically. You can be touched by a psychopath and become infected by them. It's unless you maintain a sense of humor about everything, really, and maintain humility, it's like they can take you over. I've seen it happen to people, man. Like, people who are known to be good people just stare into the darkness for too long, and sooner or later the darkness starts staring back at them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's amazing is cultural history for millennia, from what we've been able to gather, attests to the same story, you know, whether it's the jinn of the Muslims and the demons of of those religions and all that kind of stuff. They tell the same story over and over. You know, humanity is battling, you know, this sort of trans-dimensional influence. I mean, cultures before us, and especially native cultures, are so attuned to the spiritual. I mean, when they sit down to eat, you know, around the fire or at the table or whatever, you know, their ancestors are very present. It's an interactive world with the other world, but that's been cut off from us, especially in the West. I mean, you know, your ancestors are dead, you know, forget about it. You know, it's, you know, the connectivity is gone, and you never mind with, you know, other elemental elements of the earth and existence and all these things. But they've talked about this, and that the potential of being controlled, steered, influenced, and even taken over by these things is extremely real. And this was from my understanding, this was a very real fact of life in previous cultures. I'm not saying the mass hypnotized cultures in big city centers and these dynastic centers like Rome and all that kind of stuff. It, not necessarily, but you look at Egyptology and what they teach, and you know, the awareness of the afterlife. I mean, it permeated society in a much more I don't know what you'd call it, transcendent way. Today, okay, they address it somewhat, but we're having to unearth all these things. We are the current day archaeologists, not just of you know, the land and sea and what's around us physically, which is another manifestation, by the way, of the awakening, things that they're finding and scientific breakthroughs, the crossover of consciousness into mainstream science. I mean, these are big developments, really.
Yeah, well, and, it's when the signal's in the air, people can start picking it up. The DNA strands done in a coil, it's what they started to think, that it's a fractal antenna, that it can send and receive signals into the ether, sort of thing. One of the best examples of that, I feel, is who invented the telescope. 9 different people who never met in different places on the planet invented a telescope on the exact same night.
And this is the guy that doesn't believe in manifestations of the awakening?
No. Like I said, to believe in the manifestations of the awakening is all well and good, but to appreciate them before the awakening is finished is a grave mistake.
Yeah. Well, it's identifying signs and symptoms, manifestations in our current world. I mean, you'll see it in
the
news.
Just that I've seen so many false awakenings, you know.
I hear you, man. No, I hear you. I share your disdain for that bullshit. That's ultimately the biggest distraction, diversion, you know, like the New Age movement moves people into a place of complacency and everything's cool. I mean, ultimately, the New World Order and their whole paradigm, if anybody researches it, it's spiritual. They want control of consciousness, human consciousness. They want to set up a whole new allegiance system that's deeply spiritual, because they know that's our ultimate activation point. There's something in us that knows something else is going on. That's why religions have been so important to put in place, to encapsulate this knowing of people and shunt it off and stick it into this hierarchical system of whatever, whether it's the ridiculous Catholic paradigm or the Muslim paradigm or the Christian, Judaic, you know, they're all hierarchical. You know, you are not the person in control. This source is not within you. You've got to look outside for it. You know, they externalize it. And as long as people are in that hypnotic trance, they're powerless and they're perfect slaves. But ultimately, what the real deal is, each of us is tapped into this source. Each of us is this source. Each of us is a part of this source. And that's why, you know, I'll always go back to, you know, it's about the individual and their continual growth and realization of this aspect that really is the ultimate empowerment of our species. And I am fully convinced this is happening on a massive scale, even with people who may not identify what it is that's happening in them. But, you know, one day they wake up and they're looking at the news with a different slant. Changes are happening in their lives that they didn't anticipate, and they're just different. Like, I mean, you know, we were talking before the show. It's a very strange world we're in. It's extremely different. And what they've tried to do, they've hijacked the whole thing off, and they've taken it off, boom, and they've moved it off to this place that has no mooring, no spiritual or what do they call it, moral compass. Everything's relativistic. You know, you judge each other by each other, and you know, just woo off into this very easy to manipulate state. And that's their MO. That's their operational system. And it's interesting too, because the what you were saying about DNA, that's what they're doing. All they can do is imitate. They can only copy. They can only mimic. And so what they're doing,
they can also distort.
Yeah, yes, completely.
And they can also invert.
Sure. Yes, no. They can influence natural processes for sure, and that's what they're doing with all the poisoning, and you know, electromagnetic stuff and everything else. But they're actually now implanting us with this, you know, smart dust, microchips, you know, through the air, through the food. This has been going on for some time. It's to supplant the natural process of the DNA, which actually, for anybody who's waking up, your DNA is morphing in a really good way. We're awakening latent capabilities within our electromagnetic systems. And the DNA is the ultimate micro metaphor or something, illustration of this capability we have. But that's why they try to tinker with it, like you just said. They try to influence it. They try to manipulate it. They try to damage it. And so, I mean, that's the warfare. This is the battle that we're undergoing. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when, you know, it's like this light versus dark. You turn on a light, the darkness is gone. It's pretty simple. Darkness cannot take over a room that is lit. You know, it doesn't happen that way. It's bullshit. It's illusional. But yet it's very real, especially if your light is not on. So what they do is work the hardest they can to turn our lights off. Physically, spiritually, mentally, socially, geopolitically, and that's what their game's all about. But if you refuse, call it refuse, but I mean, ultimately, everybody's still lit somewhere. It's like the pilot light in a gigantic oven, that little bitty light. You know, that pilot light keeps going. I mean, if you lose the pilot light, you're in trouble. And that's what happened to these, you know, sociopaths, these psychopaths. They got no pilot light. They got no pilot. They got nothing. They're just They're the ones who are completely manipulated.
I think the system and all the hierarchical institutional structures that we find ourselves that are running every faction of society nowadays are designed to be a meat grinder for people's conscience, so that in order to get to the very top, at the very end of the meat grinder, all the good people would have already been squeezed out and there's no conscience left by the time you reach CEO level.
Yeah, well said. That's exactly right. Exactly right. That's how they work.
Not entirely dissimilar from how school is a meat grinder against creativity, questioning, curiosity.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That I was going to say the same thing. That illustration comes to mind immediately. You know, it's. But you, when you see the pattern, you see these illustrations come into your mind. They're so powerful because they're so simple, yet they're so profound. But there's
so profundity for you. It's a person sitting in a meat grinder, turning the handle and grinding themselves through it.
Sounds like the old Zap comics I used to read when I was a freak in college. Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, it's macabre, but it's absolutely true. And
bit of corn on macabre.
Yeah. That'll come out too. It's a very real fact of society. I mean, you know, what comes to mind is all those famous quotes. There's nobody so enslaved as those who think they're free. It's this constant flip of the illusion and the magician's trance versus the reality that you're experiencing. And then you got the cognitive dissonance and you got dissociative disorder and all kinds of whack psychological issues that are coming up with people. I mean, seriously, psychotic. Society's psychotic. It's really fucked up. And they can't think straight. That's, you know, I warn people a lot. Careful how you drive. Watch out where you go. Not in fear, but be aware. People are out of their minds. You know, they've been, and in a way, they've lost their sense of choice. They've lost their free will. It's a pathetic state, and it hurts the heart to look at it. These people who have, you know, yielded to this thing and let themselves go down the meat grinder, and like you said, turn in their own handle, and, you know, I'm doing society a favor. It's like the global warming thing. You know, stop carbon emissions and kill yourself. It's, you know, okay, Ted Turner, you start, kill yourself and your five kids and your wife, and maybe we'll, maybe we'll believe you.
Yeah, and then, you know, maybe we can put like about 20 families up in your five separate mansions that you don't live in.
Exactly. It's like the insanity now. Obama says, let's find housing for these 10,000 Syrian refugees that I want to bring in the country. Oh, really? Did you know there's 150,000 vets on the street, homeless vets in America? You give a shit about them? I mean, it's dystopian. This kind of stuff, or leaders in Europe calling for more migrants, and, you know, the people going, I'm getting raped. We're getting raped in the street. Our country is disintegrating. He says, no, we need to do the right thing.
And meanwhile, I mean, there were entire suburbs that are just empty with like full-on houses that are like ready to be hooked up to the grid, and people could be living in them right now. But no. Let's just leave them there. They'll appreciate in value if they're not lived in.
Exactly. You know, the banks repossessed massive amounts of housing, and nobody can live in it. Yeah. There's no common sense. I mean,
plenty of common sense. The problem is, it's not that common, right? It's more like platinum sense, because it's a rather rare element, right? It's very difficult to fucking find. Oh my god! But what people have really, really forgotten, and this is the problem with people that have a conscience, is they think that everybody else is like them. They think because something's crazy that there's no reason for it. No, there's a reason for it.
All right. Yeah, and the converse is people who, you know, are challenged with the 9/11 truth, they go, well, if that was the case, everybody would know about it. They couldn't keep that secret. You know, it's very similar kind of thinking. It goes both ways. It's entrainment. It's a hypnotic entrainment. And as you know, it goes much deeper than that. There's very occult influences. There's, you know, mega deep stuff being manipulated on our planet. Ley lines and energy vortices and all this kind of stuff. They screw with everything they possibly can while keeping us completely, you know, us humanity dumbed down, ignorant, and distracted. I mean, wouldn't you do it that way if you were one of these parasitic psychopaths? I mean, it's brilliant.
Like I say to people, imagine if I told you that the world was run by incredibly crazy people. And suddenly make a whole lot of sense why it is the way it is.
Yeah, that's a good one. Plain and simple. It's so funny when I run into this with relatives and old friends. You know, well, okay, I understand. Yeah, the things are bad, but, you know, to say they're all working in concert, or, you know, there's a cabal and all this kind of stuff. Come on, that's too much.
I think Ian Wishart said, he said it's a sharks in a feeding frenzy, that each shark has its own agenda, but they all share the same target, you. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Zen Gardner. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is listener supported. So please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Check out, you know, the few of the people that are sponsoring the show, and send some coin that way. You'll get a product back for it, or just donate to me and you'll get absolutely nothing, because I give away everything for free. Okay, that's the deal. Going soon for a limited price.
What a lousy capitalist you make.
Yeah. Just shoot me and give me my anarcho-capitalist utopia, please. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, AmericanFreedomRadio.com, right here to entertain you during these dark and juicy places. The thing about being a talk radio show host on American Freedom Radio is that you can talk about whatever you want, and you can talk to whoever the hell you can get to agree to come on talk radio with you. And occasionally that means busting somebody's cherry, and then, you know, they go off and start doing talk radio circuit of their own, just like my special guest, Zen Gardner. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Boy, I dug that break. That was really good. Got the Bill Hicks clip, and then I like the man who endorses you, man. This guy's good. It was really clever.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I practice in the mirror when I trim my mustache.
Yeah. I just crossed the border. They asked that. No, I won't what tell that
it?
Joke.
What was it? I had a Mexican dude come to New Zealand with my brother just the other day, and he told us a joke when we were at the table. My brother took us to Brothers Breweries, and then I had a beer with my brother. It was great. And he came up with a joke. My name is Sancho, I work on Rancho, I make 10 pesos a day. I go see Lucy, she give me pussy, and she take my pesos away.
you could be a full-on bona fide migrant, man. You've got it down.
Well, you know, Mexico had to pull out of the Summer Olympics that are upcoming. They said because everybody who could run, jump, and swim had already gotten to the US, you know.
Oh, boy.
That's another it's one really told me.
It's really tragic because, I mean, I've got so many Mexican-American friends, dear people. I mean, and what happens now is the Americans are galvanized against races. I mean, the old divide and conquer, the same old meme. You know, it become a racial war. You know, if it's not the blacks, it's the Latinos, and if it's not the Latinos, it's the Syrians, and if it's not the Syrians, you know, and they've got this whole meme going, and people fall for it. It's just so sad. But you can understand that too, because they're bussing people into these communities, and totally screwing up the whole economic nature of the way they live, the social network. I mean, these are not natural migrations. These are not things that absorb naturally like they should, and they have done for years.
It's being done specifically, right? And the Western nations have been getting sterilized because of fluoride in the water and the vaccines and some various other factors, right? And they found out that if you don't bring in a whole bunch of migrant workers to support the population and get the tax into the machine in order to support the aging population, your entire economy collapses relatively lickety-frickin'-split. So they had to invent a whole lot of reasons in order to justify getting a whole bunch of migrants who aren't familiar with the culture or even the language in some case to come in. And unfortunately, one of the side effects is it foments racial hatred within the society, who really hate the people who are coming in and working really hard, unbeknownst to them, to prevent the society that hates them from collapsing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if anybody would do an ounce of homework, a little bit of research, they'll find the UN has a specific migration agenda. They have for a long time. There's this bag of crap named Sutherland, who used to be, I think he still is a board member of BP and Goldman Sachs and all the same, you know, scumbags. And they openly announce these things. It comes out in British newspapers. The U.S. doesn't publicize it much, but you can read it for yourself. Their policy is to homogenize Europe and, you know, the United States. This is clear. It debilitates people's sense of identity, their cultural roots. It takes away, you know, all these old anchors that they think need to be erased in their arrogance. And you know, it's in black and white, for goodness
sake. You know
what?
It's great because it works both ways. The migrants come in and they bring their own culture, but their own culture starts to get watered down, and they forget their own cultural identity because they're not living at home. They're setting up a replica of what they think in another person's country. And it also works for the people who already work there because they grew up in that country and now they're seeing it change and they think that it's becoming somebody else's and so they lose their identity too. So you get two people who don't actually have a full cultural identity because both of theirs have been watered down for one reason or another at each other's throats because they think the other is threatening their country.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, when people talk about cultural identity, it's not this kind of, nationalism. It has nothing to do with this kind of stuff. It has to do with roots and things that are very natural. It has, you know, roots in family, in you know, natural cultural processes that sustain life. And just like they're doing with our bodies, they're trying to break all these natural reactions down to where we're living on and sustained by unnatural things like you keep referring to, the fluoride and these different chemicals, you know, and radiation, which, you know, we're integrating. And I mean, you know, it looks, you know, like, I guess they're going to see who survives, and that's the kind of humans we'll allow to live here. And those who don't quite get on the program, we'll transhumanize them and we'll attach all kinds of crap to them. So we get the perfect, docile, subservient race, and obviously in much lesser numbers. This program couldn't be more obvious, more evident, with a little bit of digging. This is what they do. This is their process. This is their MO. This is what they're working towards. And, you know, again, the fact that we're aware of it says so much. You know, even though, okay, fine, you know, it is a nasty, nasty environment. You know, many of us, it's another thing I came through recently. I went through three illnesses in a row, and I'd never get sick. But after I got back from Mexico, I got laid low with something, and, you know, and no, it wasn't Zika and all that phony baloney stuff. But it was a very strange sort of flu, kind of dengue-ish, which is a nasty one. It makes your bones hurt and everything. It wasn't that, but it laid me down like nothing I've ever had before. Then something else followed because I was so weakened. Then another thing followed. And, it, you know, these are the kinds of challenges we're going to be facing, and why, you know, we need to keep our immune system strong. We need to keep, you know, taking the initiative, staying on the attack about things. But
I was sitting around and I was like, you know, I feel really comfortable. Something's wrong. Something's very wrong.
Yeah, isn't that weird? That's a funny thing. Why am I feeling these unspeakable feelings of joy? Is everything okay? Why am I feeling so happy when I know what I know?
It's just about when you realize that you're happy and you're enjoying it and you've got life good. That's when shit will hit you in the face, you know. Because you haven't been paying attention, son. It's like, wake up again. Sorry. It's like I took my eyes off the road for one second, started to enjoy the view, and then nearly end up in a ditch.
Right. I got tripped off on a really cool tune on the radio, and oh, my goodness, I made a wrong turn. It's so true. It reminds me of my trip to Hawaii a couple of years ago. That's the only other time I got sick after a flight. I mean, airplanes are so toxic. People really need to be aware about that because they recycled horrific air from the engines, never mind the chemtrails. Then if they don't get you enough there, they go down the aisle spraying these freaking canisters of crap to supposedly kill the viruses. And it's as toxic as all hell. It looks like chemtrails inside the plane. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but I've seen it several times on flights I've been on. But lost my train of thought.
It just got derailed, did it?
Yeah, it did. I got shunted off. But... you know, this is a really big aspect, you know, that realizing the daily confrontation we're in. But like you said, you start feeling happy and you think something's wrong. Well, I feel happy all the time, and not all the time, obviously. I got my own battles going on, but because I'm constantly moving for something with meaning and that has substance and that is investigative and is sharing and seeks to be empowering, It's a life force. It is. And that's why you do what you do. That's why I do what I do. That's why so many do what they do.
Well, I can't be happy without achieving the next thing. Like, I can't just like make a video and then sit there and then watch the views grow and watch the likes grow and then watch the comments grow, et cetera, et cetera. I have to be on to making the next fucking video, honestly.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. Same here. I'll finish an article and I've got hundreds of drafts of things that I've started that I never finished. You know, I get an idea and I start it and then I'll move on. Something else bumps it. And then something else comes up. But yeah, there's so much to do. I just, you know, I published my book at the beginning of the year, and thankfully it's doing extremely well. It's all 5-star reviews on Amazon, and people are, I mean, just beautiful reactions to it as I had intended and hoped, because, it, you know, it's full of empowering information. But, it, you know, as you know, it's very different. It comes at you in a unique way. Just happens.
You know, my
to
problem
be that.
With authors talking about their book, they try not to give away what's actually in the book. And no offense, but I'm just thinking about this. How can you actually talk about the book and actually explain really what's in it without somebody going, "Oh well, now I've gotten the secret and I don't need to go buy the book." I think it's more like, you know, we can give you a brief overview and things like that, or maybe even talk about particular aspects that might be useful to people. I mean, how long did you write it for, bro?
Well, it's funny you should ask these questions. Now, I'm happy to talk about it. It's it's a compilation of my writings on, but it's over years, and they've been edited and updated, and they're broken into 4 sections. What is the awakening? Aspects of the awakening, pitfalls that you're going to run into, and then how to take action now that you know what you know. And each article is a standalone. I always have a deliberately, but also it's a natural evolution of course of thought for me. They come up, you know, they end with something empowering and seeing through the madness. But I have no qualms about addressing Zionism, you know, the Holohoax, the whatever it might be, you know, alien intervention, or, you know, our strange origins, or questions like that, or language, or belief systems, religion, you know, I'll tackle whatever the heck comes up, but you know, as many people do. But this book is designed so you could just pop it open once you've gone through it, which for anybody who's just getting on the path, it is extremely empowering and will address issues that are arising in your heart you may not have identified yet. And that's the intention. And as research will do on its own, but this is a compilation with that in mind. But you can crack it open and find a particular something for the day that might just, you know, answer some questions or just be a little boost, you know, a good shot of spiritual coffee to kind of remind people, yes, it is this bad, but this is what's going on, and this is the power of, you know, the fact that you're reading this, the fact that the awakening is a process that cannot be quenched, it cannot be derailed by anybody in serious pursuit.
Think about doing an audio ad for this. Are you surrounded by morons? Are you uninspired? Is your job endlessly boring? Is your life going in absolutely no direction other than a cattle farm where you will be slaughtered later on via a vaccine? And you need a daily injection from one of Zen Gardner's books, a little bit of spiritual coffee for your daily doldrums.
I'll have to grab that little soundbite and stick it on something. Not bad. Yeah, it is. It's like that. It's a freaky thing. But, you know, I'm not afraid to reference other people's work, attribute and thank and acknowledge the influence of so many different amazing researchers, beautiful souls from all aspects of this awareness evolution, this eruption that's happening. It's important we support each other. We need to build community. We need to work together. We need to lay aside differences that don't matter. And like you, I think you talked about, you mentioned this earlier, how people get shunted. I think that's what I was gonna say. People get caught in these little shibboleths of belief or attachment.
Whoa. Did you say a shibboleth?
I said a shibboleth.
Oh my God, I love that, the sound of that word, but I have no idea what it means. Please explain.
It's a very small thing. It's just it's an old word.
Yeah, like for example, Romeo pulled down his pants and revealed his shibboleth.
Yes, that's what I was thinking exactly.
God damn, I'm good.
Yes, dear, I saw your shibboleth last night, and I was amazed.
My shibboleth and bits.
Shibboleth. It is a weird word, but it's an old sort of Christian terminology word that, you know, with Bible researchers and stuff. But it was used in the context of stupid little beliefs that keep people separated, you know, little things that don't really matter. You know, these people that are into the dogmatic aspects of religious concepts.
I don't like you because you're black. I don't like you because you're Muslim. I don't like you because you're South African.
No, it's more picayune than that. It's there's another word for you, picayune. But is the rapture going to happen before the tribulation or after the tribulation? That's kind of a big shibboleth, really. But
it'll probably be both at the same time, a rapturation.
Yeah.
You know, like the end of the world comes, congratulations.
I like your mind, brother. I like your mind.
All of the faithful will be saved. You won't have to lift a finger or do any effort to save humanity or anything like that. No, no, no. We, the Almighty, will fucking do all that shit for you, cunt.
It'll be a new style of singing, rapulating. Hey, man, I'm going to do some rapulating for you. You're going to feel transcended when I finish.
Just imagine like a very, very deep, dirty porn beat going with the arrival of the rapture. You know, it'll just be that kind of heaven that'll just come all over us. Wait a second, that came out wrong.
Yeah, I know, the second coming and all that. Some of you guys are just so dirty.
Oh, I could just imagine this. Jesus, the second coming. I don't know, like it could have been like on a second date or something like that. And the chick he was with, you know, very disappointed with him twice.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I think we just offended and lost the entire audience and lost track of the shibboleth.
Well, you know what's lost track of the shibboleth? Sounds like a movie title with Harrison Ford.
You know, it'll be the secret to the dark crystal.
Yeah. A lost shibboleth. But you know, it's interesting. The idea of, this is a little tangential, but, I was talking with somebody the other day about, you know, they're arresting kids for sending these selfies, naked selfies by these encrypted or, you know, special little social media things, and the police are busting these kids for sending, you know, naked pictures or, you know, suggestive stuff. What about the whole freaking porn industry? This is a multi-trillion-dollar Zionist Jewish-run thing, selling the minds of bazillions of people and children, and there's not a peep about it. But, oh, you know, you send a selfie or someone, a naked selfie or some kind of this, oh, we're going to jump on it. You know, the hypocrisy. The abject hypocrisy of these societal engineers, and that people can't see that, it's just mind-boggling. Maybe
it's the irony of prudish people jumping on a dick pic.
No, it's insane. It doesn't. It is. It's very, very weird stuff. It makes no sense. This is taboo. Yet here's a whole plate of it for you. You know, but you've got to pay for it. You know, it's mind-numbing, and that's the design for it. It's supposed to screw people up.
Have you noticed when a smart person watches mind-numbing stuff, they start to get really angry? I think there was a comedian, Steve Hughes, who said it best. I can't watch the television news for two reasons. Because I'm intelligent, and I have a temper.
Yeah, I like that guy. Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm tired of breaking my TV set. I mean, my goodness, people are still watching TV. It just blows my mind. It's, you know, oh, I need to be informed. Well, the television is the last place.
Yeah.
Or I can tell what's going on. I know this is neuro-linguistic programming. I'm very aware of these things.
Really? So you're aware of subliminals and what's going on in your subconscious, are you, bro? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I can sense these vibrational things, and I know they're watching me, but I'm aware of it. Therefore, it doesn't exist.
I'm aware that it's there, so it doesn't exist. All right. So, you know. So.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt me. I'm not being influenced because I'm aware of it.
I mean,
are you kidding me?
Electromagnetic radiation doesn't affect me. I'm aware of it.
Yeah, exactly. Or standing behind a manure spreader. Well, I know it's shit, you know, but he knows the way down the road, so I'm going to walk behind the manure spreader. It's, you know, but I know it's shit, so I'll take a bath when I get home.
Yeah.
You know, if I remember. You know, he's not going to get home, obviously, but jeez, man, it's just nuts.
It's watching a car wreck in slow motion, and you can't help but watch. But you also cringe at the same time. It's extraordinary. It's like watching. It's like the entire world is one giant series of the Jackass TV show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought you were going to say Star Trek, but that's just another boring out there. Yeah, it is. I think people just shut down. You know, that's one of those psychological mechanisms. They get overloaded, they shut down, pass the beer, turn on the telly, and, you know, I've got work tomorrow, and this is my big 2 days off or 1 day off, and this is my time to live life. Alan Watts says beautiful things about this. He says, you know, humanity, you would think, would whatever job they do, they'd come home to an orgy of excitement and celebration. I mean, that, you know, that we're here on Earth to and alive to experience wonderful things. And okay, you got a little job on the side, fine, but you'd come home to all this. No, they don't do that. They come home exhausted, and they turn on the programmer, and fall into their usual routine, and, you know, get angry at the football game or whatever the hell's going on, see a couple friends, and it's back to work. And they don't even question the paradigm. It just has to be. It's like the whole point of anarchism, you know. It doesn't need to be this way. You don't need the government to build your roads. You think we would not know how to build them ourselves? You don't need government for this. You don't need government for that. The statism that's been implanted in people's minds that it needs to be there.
Bro, my mate Nick, he came up with the greatest word for it, statinism.
Oh, that's good. That's a good one. Statinism. Yes, I believe in Staten.
Yeah.
He has two horns, the Republicans and the Democrats.
Yeah, two and, different branches of Statenist cult.
Yeah. a lot of people recognize the limitations, but they still accept it because they play into it. That the resistance is not conscious. It's not fully aware. It's still with their thinking that's starting to get the point is within their paradigm. That's why the breakthrough has to be something very dramatic, very profound. You know, that's why, you know, if people feel inclined to take psychedelics to wake up, do it. You know, you've got to snap out of this way of thinking and find the experiential. That's what any great teacher will tell you.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you what the answer is. I can describe what it is to me. But really, a good teacher will just be an arrow and say, it's over there. Find out for yourself.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what it is. Totally contrary to the societal paradigm is this is the way it is. Learn this, memorize that. And then, you know, this is the answer. And this philosopher and that historian and that scientific reason. And this is the way it is. And just march on. And most people,
It's a recruiting pool, basically. It's trying to It's trying to mine the recruit's mind so that they can find out who's the most brainwashed and mind controlled, so that they can pluck them out of the education system and put them into a really nice job for a very reputable company, so that they can go into that meat grinder as well and gradually get their conscience and their creativity planed away, so that by the time comes when it's CEO position time, they'll be up against two people with a conscience for the same job. And they'll just start spreading lies and misinformation about those two other people and secure the job for themselves and ensure that the company winds up making a profit off of people suffering continually. And that was their very idea.
Yeah, that's psychopathy in a nutshell right there. I mean, like if people look at the history of James Cameron, or is it James? Who's the leader of England? Something Cameron.
No, he wasn't a director, but although he did terminate a lot of people.
Anyway, Cameron, the leader of England, you know, he's raised
David Cameron.
He raised in these prep schools inside of, you know, a fully insider elitist parasitic family, like all these other kids, tortured, you know, abused, traumatized, and groomed in another world. And this person is plucked out of that freaking beaker, this petri dish, and put at the top of society, so-called top, you know, to rule without any interaction in between, total immunity to anything, you know, what everybody else experiences. And he's put into this thing, completely sordid background, pig fucker and all that. It's like, and they're all the same. I mean, all the skull and bonesers and all this, you know, there's, you know, tons of stuff.
He had sex with the Duchess of York?
Yeah. It's funny. David Icke had an illustration up today. Hilarious. It's got this guy dressed as a knight with a chain. And there's behind him, he's pulling this giant serpent. You know, it's sort of like the symbol of London, of course. And then Icke put on there, he said, oh, almost home, Your Majesty. I laughed and laughed. It was so cool.
You see, this is the thing. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, bro. Like, who are the people that you can kind of like trust in the truth movement, that sort of thing, that don't actually go out and try to destroy people and steal things from them, who aren't actually psychopaths? And it's the people who can actually really make you laugh, isn't it?
Yeah, to me, I've got a few measuring sticks that I get my bearings from. If someone's lacking a sense of humor and doesn't laugh at this insanity, there's something really missing. So if somebody who's like a super serious researcher and has no sense of humor and is bummed out by everything, they obviously don't see through it, don't see past it, and don't really get the bigger picture. You know, and the other is, you know, people who share openly and give other people credit and, you know, act like community people, not some kind of isolated paragon of truth, you know, and I, me, my, and all this kind of stuff. It's, you know, there's no place for it. The situation's too dire. The reality's too overwhelming. And, you know, it's time to lay the bullshit aside. And this, you know, external crap ego stuff and work together. This is, you know, when you're in the trenches, I mean, you know, I can't imagine. And, you know, every little kid wonders, what would it be like if I was in the World War II trenches, or if I went to Vietnam, or if I went to Iraq or something? I can't imagine those kind of conditions, what it must do to people, which is.
Well, I met somebody who was 47 confirmed kills as part of the Maori battalion. And, him and his nephew, who was in Desert Storm, they informed me that the reason why they drink so much and do so every night is just because it's the only way they can actually get any real sleep. Because everything they did and everything that happened to them during those times doesn't go away. And it's only when you quiet your mind to go to sleep that they become their most powerful. So could you imagine a hurt so bad that you can't sleep unless you're so drunk that you pass out?
It's tragic. It's absolutely tragic.
Why are veterans homeless, ladies and gentlemen?
Because why are they committing suicide?
Yeah, why are they committing suicide?
At an increasing rate. Mm-hmm. I mean, even mainstream is covering this, you know, more and more. Why do they target and demonize vets? Because they know they've seen it. They know it's bullshit. And they're capable of resistance. So they demonize them. These guys have been through more shots than even American babies. They get experimental shots. They're so fucked up on drugs, it's horrific. Never mind the EMFs and the stuff that they experience. These are really messed up people, and they need our love and compassion.
And they don't like talking about it either.
No,
like really,
no,
with
no.
anyone. I mean, I'm lucky that I am who I am. You know, I can just get shit out of people, right? And I got these two guys to open up to me about their friend, their best friend from since they were like 5 years old, going to kindergarten together, dying in his arms. About cutting a 14-year-old Turkish boy's throat who was covered in grenades. You know? That kind of stuff I was able to get out of these guys within an hour and a half of meeting them.
Yeah.
Right? Well, now, they were so... We cried, bro, like, a lot. Yeah. It was really emotionally painful thing just to hear them tell you what happened and how they felt about it.
Yeah, they can't help rip you up, yeah.
Yeah, and the guy with 47 kills, he said he spent 47 years in jail.
Really?
That's how he looked at it. For every life that he took, it was a year in jail to him.
And here these people are recruited, glorified, mind-controlled, bamboozled, propagandized. I mean, what really pisses me off, if you look at a sporting event, they trot out these vets, you know, they do all their, you know, ceremonial stuff on with the flags and all this bullshit. And then they wheel up all these guys who are amputees and disabled in horrific condition. And everybody salutes them and honors them and this and that. Well, guess what? When the ceremony's over, they're dumped in the trash. These guys, not everybody, but still, it's such hypocrisy. But it's all programming. Why do they do it? They do it at college games. They do it at the professional games, incessantly. You know, flyovers and all this bullshit. You know, the military glorification, and it's such butchery. It's such butchery at such a visceral level. And these guys opened up to you, Vinny, because you had empathy. They felt the empathy, and they could. That's what draws people out, and they finally feel comfort to be able to say it. I'm sure it helped them because. Imagine holding that kind of stuff in. But I met people from World War II who still couldn't talk about it. And parents, you know, that had been through stuff, and they're just clammed up. They had kind of a steely, thin-lipped look about them. There was, you know, a certain, it looked like a reserve, like a holding back. And people attributed it to, they've got military background. That's why they're so, you know, stiff and regimented. No, they're containing pain. They're dealing with trauma, and they're trying to live two lives. They've got their traumatic inside life, and then the external life they're trying to continue with. I mean, what a horrible, horrible way to exist.
Yeah.
And they perpetrate it continually, these pieces of shit. Their kids don't go to war. They don't go to war. They have no idea what the whole thing's about. You know, they just send other people. It's fodder. It's they don't give a goddamn.
Oh, they literally don't care. I mean, one of my mates, his dad used to teach at like the most prestigious private school in New Zealand back in the day, right? And so he got to go to that school for free. And there was him there and his reasonably, you know, middle-class family in amongst all these incredibly self-entitled snobs, and they were just basically evil, horrible kids who are just going to grow into even worse adults who actually hate people who don't have money. They actually hate people who don't have money.
Oh, yeah. The disdain is incredible. It's palpable.
Like it's they incredible. Think that your life can be measured in a dollar sign. a dollar value. You have X amount of millions of dollars. Oh, I'll give you X amount of respect. If you have X amount of hundreds of dollars, I give you X amount of disrespect.
Yeah, that's their currency. That's how shallow they are. It's pathetic. These people are, psychopathy. It's something, if people haven't researched what it really is, it is a very interesting thing to research. But they found 4 to 6% of people by psychological tests are psychopathic. And a vast majority of them are in corporate and political positions.
One thing I remembered just along this vein, there was an article in the, I think it was the Telegraph or the Guardian, I forget which, but it talked about private preparatory schools and the boys who come from them get detached, right? They get ripped away from their parents at a reasonably young age, first of all. That's not good for a kid. Second of all, they are put into a group with all of these other boys who don't actually have any extra maturity themselves or anything. There's not really a whole lot of role models within their daily and after school life to really look up to. So they essentially have to become adults, pretend adults. They have to pretend to be adults in order to live with the regimen that they have to do living in these private boarding schools. As a result, when the child actually comes into real, age level adulthood, they haven't had any necessary childhood natural development that's gone into. They've basically skipped that. So as a result, you get people who appear to be adults, but are very, very childish.
Absolutely. That's a good summary. If people could look through that lens and look at their leaders. I mean, look at the Bushes. Look at these little pampered pieces of crap that all they know is political nonsense speech and,
Here's an idea. You ever seen president break ground with a shovel, right? Say, oh, right. We're doing this work site or whatever. What if he was actually there in proper work gear and it wasn't just a photo op and he was actually there to work alongside the guys who were digging that ditch for a couple of hours that day just to ensure that he wasn't just a self-entitled photo op kind of person? Like if you actually really muck in and really help people, wouldn't that be somebody you'd want to vote for?
Totally. That's why people resonate with real people. But they don't make it up that high because it's too disgusting and there's no place for virtue. And anybody who joins that political establishment, either they fall away or they're pushed out or they change. They change. Well, I'm going to change the system, but I have to become like them to change them. Over. It's over, dude. You
sit
lost
on
it.
The outside, fire scud missiles at the people on the inside, I say. You know? Worked for Saddam, didn't it?
No, it's the truth, You really wonder what all this is coming to because if I woke up one morning and, 40 of these top people had happened to have been taken out overnight, I wouldn't cry a tear. I mean, but I'm not a violence oriented person, but we're being killed. We're being exterminated, which, it's...
You know why bad people don't get assassinated?
Why?
Because only good people would want to see them get killed, but good people by trade generally aren't fucking assassins.
Exactly. That's the weird paradox we're living in. I'm talking about conscious awakening and raise your vibration and all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, somebody's going to pound on your door, come in and rob your kids from you and rape your wife. Like, well, that's nice. That wasn't the vibration I was tuning into. It's not that kind of stupidity that we're talking about because people should be armed for intruders. People should be smart. They should be protective. They should respond. They should get angry.
As long as they don't have enough fluoride, it's
Yeah, well, that's the entrainment. It's terrible. And the intimidation, the uniforms and all the equipment. Look what they're doing. They're not only arming themselves to the teeth, but they're dressing in these Star Wars uniforms now. Police, the little local cop who used to be, help the kid across the street. Gone.
Now and, he'll tase the child because he like dropped his lollipop and didn't want to pick him up for and so he tased him for littering and then told him to stop resisting.
Yeah, I mean, it that sounds like a comical illustration, but it's happening every day. I mean, you see these clips on YouTube all the time, cops killing people that had their hands up in the air, they weren't doing anything, they were just black. And they, you know, come up and because the guy turned around too quick or reached in his pocket or something, even without cause, they'll just assassinate the guy. And they get away with it. They don't even get leave of absence. It just gets buried. You know, it's surreal. It's aggravating. I mean, that's part of their agenda, too, is to piss people off. So to get the rise, the reaction they want, then the justification to come in with more force. So, you know, it's kind of a fine line to walk, but on the other hand, it's really a heart thing because we each have to respond to each situation according to how we have to. So we're headed for, you know, a very serious societal apocalypse when these things it's on the boil for a long time.
I don't like that perspective that some people have that there's going to be like this drop off point or whatever, like there's going to be a sudden end of the world and it's an ongoing apocalypse. Okay. Yeah.
You're very right. Because even World War III, World War III is already here.
It's the war on terrorism. Look, these people are slow and patient. They don't want to destroy everything unless they have to. And they don't have to. Not yet. No. And even when people start taking control back, they still won't even want to do it. They want to control everything. And they figured out long ago that taking it by force doesn't work. You have to get people to want to be saved.
Well, there's those famous quotes by Paul Warburg and Rockefeller, you know, we'll have, you know, the New World Order would come into place by force or voluntarily, you know, implying, you know, the choices are
by conquest or consent.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the intimidation's always there. I mean, I think there is stuff coming, but it, you know, it's almost like a logical end of the insanity that's already taking place and we're seeing. I mean, it wouldn't take much if the food supply stopped, let's say in the States, and city centers weren't getting their trucks of food since it's on a demand basis now. They used to have stockpiles of food, but no more. Without food, people become another creature. They become, the survival kicks in.
Yeah.
And things become otherworldly.
In a survival situation, your number one threat is a man with hungry kids.
Yeah, yeah. And he may not, who knows if he's armed or not, but he's coming for food and he's going to die without it. And you might be the target. You've got a nice farm. You've got all your survival supplies. You know, they can smell it and they're going to, you know, wander their way out there. It's you know, the potential scenarios, I guess we call it, are not pretty. But that's, it's a reality. This is, we're living in a very tenuous situation. The things could shut down for whatever reason, you know, be it...
People have no idea. Like, in a month, 90% of the population in the U.S. would be dead if mainstream, like, just supplies of food or electricity just got shut off for a month. In that first month, 90% of the people would be dead. I mean, in the 30s, during the Great Depression, 10 million people in the United States starved to death. At a time in which 90% of the population lived in rural areas and grew their own food. Today, 90% of people live in cities and do not grow their own food. Imagine what's going to happen.
Exactly. You know, it's just, you know, it's very simple, logical thinking.
Now, these are last resorts. These are Malthusian catastrophe sort of scenarios, which won't come to fruition unless the New World Order gets given a reason to. Now, I thought about this. Considering its plan has been so successful so far, very, very slowly with the totalitarian tiptoeing towards tyranny, right? Why would they give up that game? And the answer is they wouldn't unless they had to abandon it. And they'd only have to abandon it if they got a very strong indication that their entire plan, every part of it, is coming apart at the seams, right? And yeah, it's very, yeah, very unlikely that that's going to happen because there's so many wormholes and command and control techniques that they're getting in to divide people, even divide the truth movement or whatever. It's pretty easy to take people out as well if they become great leaders, etc. So they've got a long-term plan. It's going to be over the next 100 years. They don't need to exterminate us because they've already flooded the entire population's existence with chemicals and poisons and electronic radiation and goodness knows whatever the elsty fuck that's going to be bad for your system. So they don't need to kill you. They don't need to cut off the food supply. You'll kill yourself. Yeah. That's the whole idea, because that way nobody wakes up to the fact that there's actually somebody killing you. Everybody thinks it's an accident, all right? How do you resist somebody who does that? And I think the answer is you resist them in the exact same way that they're conquering you, slowly but surely, on an everyday basis, slightly below the radar. You're doing something in a little bit every way, every day, to fuck with their agenda.
That's right. Dissolve the matrix. And it's happening. They're having problems. And the more catatonic they come back with their ridiculous maneuvers, it's... to me, it's more evidence that they're desperate and they know humanity is awakening. And it's sort of an unknown factor because they can't tune into it. They have no empathy. They've got no tuning to this, to the stuff that we're tuned to. So it's kind of a war of the worlds going on. It's like they say about World War III. It might be coming. It's going to be we're already in World War III. The definition of a world war is a certain number of nations being engaged in battle over, you know, certain concepts and stuff. Well, that's going on right now. It's been going on for years. It's similar to what you're saying about the slow kill. It's brilliant of them, the slow kill, because then we bury each other. We take care of business. We do away with things. It leaves infrastructure in place so they can do what they want afterwards. I mean, I agree with you. Essentially, that's their ultimate plan, is to kind of make this transition not peaceful or amicable, but the least sloppy possible, so they don't have to do the cleanup.
Yeah.
Make us do the cleanup.
I mean, you don't run into your hen house and then just kill all the hens, because then you've just got a whole lot of meat that you're not going to be able to eat and a whole bunch of eggs that ain't going to get laid for tomorrow. All right. So
that's
the thing. We're being farmed. You don't kill off your livestock, not while it's still profitable for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. That's exactly well said. And it's been going on for so long. Why should we be led to believe it's going to change speed all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Except, you know, extenuating circumstances. And I think we're at a point. I mean, people have said this for decades, centuries, you know, this reaching this apex where things go wonky. But I've been in countries. I was in Iran when the takeover was happening. And it is a completely different climate. People have to be prepared for that. And I write about this a lot, because when it goes into lockdown, or whether it's, you know, whether you call it, martial law and things like that, things change. People behave differently. Police get happy on the trigger. Terrible things take place. There's a lot of fear. Power cuts on and off. Telephones cut on and off. You can't get news. You get your news by rumors and by neighbors. And did you hear this? Then you hear gunshots in the night, machine guns. You see police going up and down the roads. I mean, military up and down the roads. You don't know what's going on. When I was in Iran, I actually worked at the TV station, and I still went to work while this stuff was starting to transpire. Things kind of continued, but at nighttime was curfew. Bam. And you didn't go out during curfew. I mean, you could get shot even though you were innocently trying to just go to the store to get some food. Or it was famous there that doctors would be called at night to go help people, and they'd be driving around, and the police would say, "Who are you?" And he'd reach in his pocket for his doctor's ID, and they'd shoot him on the spot. Things get really strange. But I would go to the TV station and watch the feed of what's going on from Reuters and AP. They have these, you know, news feeds, video, and as well as the ticker tape back then, or not ticker tape, you know, those old machines. This is years ago, and you'd be seeing these scenes and stories about what's going on that you weren't hearing a peep about locally. And on the station, that I'm working at on TV was Paris Fashions. And I mean, Iran was opulent. I mean, they were really Europeanized, very so-called progressive. And they just kept playing the same old stuff because the Shah was still trying to hold his place. And it was, you know, it was what we're experiencing on the slow-mo in the West now. It all of a sudden hits fast forward and you're in the midst of it and you got to make some decisions. And my wife was 9 months pregnant. We couldn't get out of the country. Nobody would fly us. You know, we had to liquidate whatever we had. I had visa issues. I mean, all of a sudden you're pushed up against the wall when something like that gets precipitated. And we don't know if that'll happen in the States, but it's very, very possible. Mm. You've got this, you know, maniacal cabal running the place that could pull any trigger it wants at any time. But like you said, what they would prefer is sort of an orderly death of the populace, an orderly decimation of society and culture until it gets to the point that they want it to be. They would prefer that. And it seems to be working pretty masterfully. These guys have really worked at it, you know, biologically, electronically, socially, politically, media-wise. They've done an amazing job. You got to hand it to them. These guys are goddamn smart.
Controlling the masses is what they do. It's control over the direct individual that they don't quite have a handle on yet. And I think it's people that are talking to each other in their daily life, that word of mouth thing, you know, how it's the most effective form of advertising. That's how people are really going to get their truth. And it's problematic, though, because during those times of great confusion when there's no information around there, it's basically you're taking a stab in the dark during the fog of war and you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what's going on. And in your confusion, it brings about a lot of anxiety. Now, I try to relieve anxiety on this show, you know, like I don't make people feel afraid of something, of things that haven't happened yet. I don't tell them I've got the documents, you know, I don't do emergency broadcasts. I don't interrupt radio broadcasts with ads to advertise with survival products to people. Right. I try not to talk over my guests for 90% of the time they're on air or with me. I don't reiterate and repeat the same point dozens of times in a row. And I don't do the broadcast to wake people up, you know, in inverted commas. I can't wake you up, only you can.
Exactly, yeah.
Fuck's sake. That was my point. You know, somebody put a bloody gun to your head and say, all right, sit down and watch 600 hours of random YouTube documentaries again.
Exactly. It's like when people try to jam the information into people, say, you're missing the point. That's what went wrong with our whole upbringing. We were told what to believe. We were corralled into information. The whole idea is to discover for yourself and cultivate creativity, imagination. It's a completely opposite paradigm. But it's like trying to, you know, wear your favorite shorts and feel sunshiny on a rainy day. You got to have an umbrella and you're out there and there's this contraposition of elements and this doesn't quite fit. But it's almost like that. We've got to keep that internal sunshine going despite the storm that we're walking through. And it's, you know, it's
dark times call for dark comedy.
Yeah. Right on, man. Yeah, right on. And it's as long as it alleviates things and points to truth. That's the beauty of humor, man. I mean, if I get tired and, or I wake up, I keep weird sleeping schedules and I get up and I've been working all, you know, for many, many hours. I'll just pop on a Bill Hicks or a George Carlin video and just relax, you know, because they perceive and plumb the depths of truth in such a relieving way. You know, it's always been ironic to me that if you listen to George Carlin, you don't know it's a comedy act. You'd think there's some guy ranting about, you know, the New World Order and everything else, but the way he presents it and his acumen and his use of language.
And it manages to insert several dick jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He'll pepper it with that stuff just to shake people up. And I mean, that has a good effect, you know, use weird stuff, use sexual stuff. Yeah. It doesn't matter as long as it gets people awake. But what always drives me nuts is the people in the audience go, ha, 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 ha. They turn around, they go home. Like, you know, it was, you know, okay, you got a good laugh. You had a little, you know, liberation of spirit, which is what laughter is. But, you know, what are you going to do with this information?
I mean, eventually something will happen to them. And then all those things that they laughed at and thought were funny, they realized that they weren't a joke. That's what happens.
Exactly right.
You have to tell them the joke first so that they can get the punchline later on when it hits them in the face.
Yeah, I like that. Well said.
God damn, I'm good. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Zen Gardner has been my guest. This is AmericanFreedomRadio.com, listener-supported station. It's no taboo topics, ladies and gentlemen. We can swear, we can be adults, and we can be honest with you. And I think you deserve it. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again sometime.